Hey, listeners, ever have trouble getting someone on the phone when you have a question about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day, or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. When you hear that Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan, you're probably thinking, what's the catch? Well, there isn't one. Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with premium wireless plans for just $15 a month. Say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages. All plans come with unlimited talk and text and high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. You can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. Our producer, Sean, is a big Mint Mobile guy. Here's what he had to say.
For a fraction of the cost, Mint Mobile proved to have excellent coverage with no drop calls or unsent texts. Plus, they make it super easy for me to activate my device just by following a few simple steps online. And bam, done. It was great.
To get this new customer offer and your new three-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/literally. That's mintmobile.com/literally and cut your wireless bills to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/literally. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Hey, Rob, how you doing?
Thanks for coming on, man. I'm psyched. The tables are turned, and now you're
yes.
In the hot seat, so look out.
We don't even have a table. That's how much it's turned.
I know. I love it. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Literally with me, Rob Lowe. This is fun. Jimmy Kimmel, he's just so funny, and I always love going on his show, and to have him come on my show is feels really good. He's always been good to me on his show, and we have fun. We just have always connected, but we've never gotten to talk beyond a seven-minute segment, and that is about to come to an end. And here's the thing. If you're interested in the Academy Awards, if you're at all interested in horrible music from the 80s, and by that I mean not just bad, I mean horrible music from the 80s, I think you're going to find some interesting nuggets in the conversation that is to come. I love long-form talks, don't you? Remember the old days when you could just do that?
Yeah. Well, you know, talk shows were 90 minutes long when they started. You could really get into stuff.
All those old clips of Carson and people just shit-faced.
People coming out drunk and smoking and just yammering on for quite a while, talking about people that the audience doesn't know at all by their first name. It was good stuff.
I was at Chasen's with...
Yeah, right, exactly, yeah. But then you get to know the restaurants and you feel like you're on the inside or something, you know?
So good. Who was... Did you ever have any of the old school Hollywood guys like Jimmy Stewart? Did you ever catch any of the true icons before they passed?
Yeah, I had Kirk Douglas on the show. Of course, Don Rickles many times on the show.
Yeah.
Bob Newhart. Yeah, if you're talking about like some of the really older guys, a lot of musicians for sure. Tony Bennett.
Yeah.
Paul Anka. We had Lou Rawls, you know. Lou wasn't that old. Lou always
seemed old. He seemed old when he was having hits on the radio.
You're right. You'll never find. Like, what? You're 30.
How great was he?
He was great. Yeah. Nice guy.
So you didn't have Burt Reynolds?
No, never had Burt Reynolds on.
I'm surprised that you never had Burt.
He kind of stopped doing talk shows at a certain point.
Yeah.
I think he got angry or something somewhere along the way. And he was one of the best ever. He was one of the best talk
the best ever.
Guests.
Well, you know, the great I'm obsessed and is a host of the Oscars and the Emmys and one of the best we've ever had. You can appreciate this. I'm obsessed when they put you in the boxes right as you're about to win or lose something. And you can see all of the actors' faces
right
in the category. And my two favorite box moments were Bert's losing for Boogie Nights, where everybody thought he was going to win. He thought he was going to win. This was going to be the right. And of course he lost. And his face couldn't, if he had a thought balloon, an actual thought balloon, bang, like pop-up video, it could not have been more clear. And it was like, I knew these guys would fuck me.
What was the other one?
Without a doubt. It's, God bless him, my dearly departed best buddy, Bill Paxton. When he was nominated for Big Love.
Uh-huh.
And that was, so Big Love was out and he was opposite a bunch of really great people. And what was the show? This Dexter, serial killer show from Showtime.
Right. Yeah.
And what is that actor's name? I'm going to think of it. Michael C. Hall. Michael C. Hall, who's great. And Michael C. Hall had bravely battled and won like a lymphoma battle that year. They had to shut the show down. Remember that?
Right.
So the show was off the air for a year. It comes back and Bill's nominated and they're sitting there and he's got the box on him and they go, and the winner is Michael C. Hall. And Bill turns to his wife and I can, cause I'm a lip reader, clear as day, goes, oh, the cancer card.
Wow. Did anybody else pick up on that or just his friends?
It was kind of a thing. It was right before social media was what it is today. Because today, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
You don't get away with anything today. No. The cancer card.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Lucky Michael.
Yeah.
He gets a statue.
Bill was a great guest. He went on Leno for Apollo 13. And I like when people kill it on talk shows, whether in a good way, a bad way, or weird way, as I'm sure you do. And he went on and he was trying to convince Jay and the Academy voters. He was clearly playing to the Academy voters. That was it. Couldn't give a crap about getting the audience to come to the movie. It was purely he wanted those votes for that movie. Mm-hmm. And he was like, God, it's Apollo 13, you know, the technology that went into putting that rocket up on. I mean, come on. It's the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. He thought that
was, it didn't work.
No, but he thought that was the way in. There was science in the movie.
He didn't realize you just had to play the cancer card. He would have been fine.
Oh, God.
He was a nice guy. I had him on the show.
Oh, he was the best. He was, he's one of those, you have people in your life that you think about it. Well, I think about it every day because he's my good friend and I miss him, but also he was so quotable. I think the last thing he did was like a CBS procedural version of the great Denzel Washington movie where he played the cop and won the Oscar for it.
Training Day. Oh, right.
So they did Training Day.
Right.
Yeah, they did Training Day and they put Bill in the Denzel role. And Bill had never done.
Yeah, they were interchangeable. You think of one. I often get them confused.
And but Bill had never done a network TV show, as I'd done a bunch of them. And I was like, Bill, how's it going? He goes, I'll never forget. He goes, I got Rob. We're kind of making widgets on this one. I wish the scripts were better. And I thought, we're kind of making widgets on this one.
That's a good one. Yeah, yeah, I got people like that for sure in my life. A lot of quotable characters.
You must.
My cousin Sal being at the top of the list. My cousin Sal, we went to Mexico a couple of weeks ago. his wife, my wife, the four of us, we'd been looking forward to this trip for 6 weeks. We've been literally counting the day. Each day there was a text like 39 more days till we get to Mexico. So Sal doesn't drink and the rest of us do. We get to Mexico. We're drinking cocktails. He orders like a juice of some kind. He gets sick, terribly sick, like doctor to the hotel in the middle of the night kind of sick. Immediately, he misses the whole weekend. And I paid for the hotel. So he really, really wanted to pay for like the meals, but he was missing for all the meals. So at the end of the trip, I find an envelope full of cash in my car on the floor. And he sent me a text. He's like, look on the floor of your car. And I find this envelope full of cash. And there's thousands of dollars. And I'm like, I don't want this money from him. This is ridiculous. So I wrap it up in a nice gift box and I send it to his son for his birthday, his son Archie. And his son's at the table with the cake and everything. And he's opening his presents and he opens this box and there's thousands of dollars in it. Right. And he's like, he gets nervous. He's like, what am I supposed to do? And Sal's like, give me that money. Anyway, I got a text from Sal this morning. He's at the, I have an account, which is one of the greatest things that's ever happened to me. I have an account at the grocery store on the corner. So I don't actually have to bring cash in. They bill me once a month. He's given this huge wad of cash to the guy who owns the grocery store. He sends me a picture of him and the guy who owns the grocery store with all the money. So I guess I guess I'll be getting eggs for the next like 13 years now for free.
That makes you feel like you're living life. You know, when you have like you have it wired on that, like when the maitre d's have your table ready for you. Or you have a thing at the grocery store, you feel like, you know.
For sure. But this is kind of more of an old-timey thing, I think. I think this is something that, you know, I know like my grandparents had this in Brooklyn growing up where you'd go to the butcher and you knew the butcher. And then you'd pay the butcher whenever you got paid. You know, it was one of those things. You didn't actually shell out the cash while you were there. And I love that.
I like old school stuff. I know you do. You kind of are throwback that way, right?
I do. Yeah. Very much.
Do you still wish gentlemen wore hats? Are you one of those guys?
I would love to wear a hat. I was looking at hats online just yesterday. But what I've learned at 53 years old, if there's anything I've learned only a few things. But one of them is I never look good in a hat. I'm okay in a baseball hat, but all other hats, I always think they look great, especially in the store. I think that I really look good in this hat. And now I've accumulated a huge box of hats because it's great if you're on vacation because my wife will be nice enough not to make fun of me while we're on vacation. But as soon as we get back home, she's like, you're not wearing that hat here. And then I'll wear the hat into work and everybody's like, oh, my God, what are you wearing? And I've spoken to Cedric the Entertainer about this because he's able to wear any hat he wants and it looks great on him.
Yep.
But for whatever reason, it does not work for me.
I have a theory about it, too, is like, you know, they say John Kennedy killed the hat. You know that, right? Have you heard this?
That, he did?
Yeah, that Cary Grant killed the undershirt.
Oh.
And John Kennedy killed the hat. So Cary Grant took his shirt off in a movie at a time when all men, all of them, wore undershirts. And Cary didn't have an undershirt. And that was the end of... The end of it.
Wow.
And
has anyone looked into the possibility that the sniper in Dallas was a hat maker?
Haberdasher?
A haberdasher? I mean, that's the obvious connection.
I think. Because Kennedy stood up in the freezing cold in his inaugural and noticed there's people storing top hats in that photograph.
What do you think the age you can hit? For you, it'll probably be like 130 because you'll still look great when you're 100. But what do you think the age is where you can start wearing a hat and it's okay? Because I do think there is an age. And I think it might be associated with baldness where
that's what I was getting at is Kennedy was a great, and I say this all respect to departed wonderful president, a huge narcissist and had amazing hair. And he's like, what the fuck am I? It's the moment of my lifetime. I'm not covering up this amazing head of hair I have. It's not happening.
He did have great hair. Yeah, you're right.
I'm telling you, that's why he wasn't wearing a hat. What do you think Reagan didn't wear a hat? Although he does have that famous picture of him with the cowboy hat at a really jaunty angle. Because then you get into angles. It's not just enough to wear a hat. You got to figure out, are you going to pull off the Redford hair peeking out through the front move?
Right. The Ron Howard real low.
Which just got lower as the years went on.
or the old guy move, which is to like literally just place the hat atop your head. It doesn't even, it's not like a weak wind will blow it right off your head because it's just barely sitting on there.
They're wearing it almost like a yarmulke.
Yeah. A yarmulke. You are a white guy, aren't you? A yarmulke.
Yarmulke. We'll put a nail at the end of
my
it.
My uncle yarmulke.
No, I'm nothing if not highly white. There's no getting around it. The hat game is... It's a tough thing. Do you have that thing that I do where you like, what do you think when you see a grown man carrying or on a skateboard?
Well, I think I have a different opinion of it now than I used to. I used to think it was an indication that they were a crazy person. And then maybe I went through a period like, oh, he's trying, look at him trying to be cool. And now I'm of the mindset, especially since like, I think Tony Hawk was on my show almost like 20 years ago. It's like, yeah, these guys have been skateboarding their whole lives. So like it's like shoes to them. And you know, I do this and I don't know if you do this, but I wear the same kind of sneakers that I wore in high school. I can't wear like the cool sneakers that look like NASA designed them. I have to wear like the Stan Smith or the classic Nikes with just the stripe on the side.
Do you do Vans?
No Vans for me. I don't wear Vans, but,
you didn't grow up in California though.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I grew up in Las Vegas and there were definitely people who wore Vans, but I was just not one of them. I didn't wear Vans, but, I feel uncomfortable and dumb in anything that seems like modern shoe wise.
It's so interesting what you can pull off and what, remember Kangol hats?
Oh yeah. Sam Jackson.
Sam Jackson. Yeah. Who's the only guy who should wear them?
Right. For sure.
I could never do the Kangol.
Yeah, no, you shouldn't. Listen, if you walked onto my stage with the Kangol hat on, it would be the subject of the whole rest of our conversation.
I know it really would be. Just wait. Just wait. Cause it's going to be, hey Jimmy, how are you? And I'm going to be Kangoled out. Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Where else can you go surfing and skiing in the same day? Or check out a world-class art museum and camp out under a brilliant night sky same day? Or hike through the redwoods and get a luxury spa treatment? There's only one answer: California. No matter where you go across this state, you will find a way to play. I love California. And I have not yet surfed and skied in the same day, although I do both. So that is on my bucket list. It's the most beautiful place in the world. Discover why California is the ultimate playground. Head to visitcalifornia.com to start planning your trip today. Looking for a sparkling clean bathroom without so much hassle? Wet and Forget Weekly Shower Cleaner is here to revolutionize your cleaning future. Just spray today, rinse tomorrow, and voila! Enjoy a sparkling clean shower and tub without any scrubbing. It's the secret to a hassle-free clean bathroom that many are discovering. With over 33,000 five-star reviews, Wet and Forget Weekly Shower Cleaner has proven its effectiveness on shower glass, fixtures, tiles, and more, ensuring everything shines with minimal effort. This product has gained a loyal following thanks to its once-a-week application that makes it a standout in the cleaning aisle. Join the ranks of satisfied users who enjoy more me time and less clean time with Wet and Forget Weekly Shower Cleaner, available at Amazon, Lowe's, Menards, Home Depot, and Ace Hardware. It's the perfect choice for anyone wanting to simplify their cleaning routine. Don't miss out on a chance to transform your bathroom cleaning with just one application a week. Pick up a bottle of Wet and Forget Weekly Shower Cleaner today and join the thousands who've already made the switch to effortless clean. I love fast cars, but there aren't a ton of high-performance EVs. They're certainly out there, but when I get a chance to get behind the wheel of one, I love it, and I was blown away by the Kia EV6 GT. When you get behind the wheel of the Kia, it is literally like being in a state-of-the-art rocket ship, but also comfortable. The thing goes from 0 to 60 in 3.4 seconds. It is the premium driving experience. And of course, it's an EV. So the climate thanks you. SiriusXM provides access to over 165 channels in the vehicle. Music, sports, news, comedy, yacht rock. Let's go. Little Steely Dan going in your Kia. Come on now. So check it out today. It is the all-electric Kia EV6 GT. I had a blast checking it out. Believe me, you should do it yourself via kia.com/EV6 to learn more. That is kia.com/EV6. Kia, movement that inspires. You know, here's what you need to know. Do you know that going on your show is the, we're talking about clothes, is it's one of the hardest decisions I ever have to make is what to wear. It's like easier to go to the fucking Oscars than to go on your show.
Really? Why is that?
Because it's like, you know what you're going to, at the Golden Globes, Oscar, you're wearing a tuxedo, you know what you're going to do.
Right.
Your show, you always look so good in your suit. It's late night, it's night, which, you know, it's a certain thing if you're dressing for the evening.
Right.
I would posit it's even a different thing to be dressing for late night. And so you're faced with, do I go really cool club, like out on the town club vibe, date night, ending night, cool thing? Or do I go, you know, adult suit, like, you know, you. So
I think when you make multiple appearances, which you have, you mix it up, you know, that way I don't get... And keep the spark alive between us, you know. I don't take you for granted. Like, my dad wore a suit to work every day. And you know, that's how we'd see him leave for work in the morning, and that's how we'd see him come home at night. But then on the weekends, he looked terrible. I mean, just terrible. And I'm convinced that part of the reason he looked terrible is because we were used to seeing him in a suit for 5 days a week. And then when we saw him in his V-neck t-shirt with the yellow stains underneath and a pair of shorts and like those big white dad sneakers that dads wore in the garden and probably still do, he looked worse than the typical guy who might be wearing that very same outfit.
What if I came on in... like the worst flying outfit, not worse than I would actually ever wear myself, but as a bit, like I did like the mesh, like University of Michigan, old school down to the knees shorts and flip flops.
Oh,
would that be a thing? Like as if I.
Like a hip hop mogul from 1997 type of deal.
Yes.
Like maybe even with slippers on, some kind of slippers on, socks perhaps. But they're expensive slippers.
I think maybe that's what it is. Is I just come on now and have you have to guess what bit I'm trying to pull off.
Interesting. I try to guess after you've come out, or I try to guess before you come out. Like I know I get a heads up beforehand.
No. Okay. You take a gander at me coming around the curtain, and you have to immediately go, Rick Rubin, 1990. Hanalei Bay out to lunch at the vegan
I like
delivery place.
I would love to do that. Just, you know, my old partner from the Man Show, Adam Carolla, he is so bad at, like, he'll wear I'm not joking when I say this, like the tuxedo he had for his wedding, like the next week he was out painting in it. Like he had still had the pants on.
Why would he do such a thing?
Because he's just too lazy to like take something into the dry cleaner and they're right there and he just put them on and he just continue about his business. And so we got to the point where, you know, we used to call him in at the last minute a lot. And we got to the point where he never knew what to wear. So we bought him a suit and just kept it here for him. So when he came, he had something to wear. But the result was him wearing the same suit and the same shirt, like his first 19 appearances in a row. So if you ever go back and like look at a tape of something that happened years ago, it's like he's wearing the same clothes every single time. It's like his uniform.
And that's the other thing. There are guys that, you know, Steve Jobs, the mock turtleneck.
I like that whole thing. I mean, I don't
like... You like the uniform?
No, turtleneck, I don't like. I like the idea of the uniform.
Do you?
I have a hard time. Here's where I have a hard time. This is what I thought you were getting at. I have no problem with super casual. Like, you know, I've got plenty of jeans and t-shirts and whatever. And I have no problem with a suit because it's easy. You get in the suit and here's a tie and everything always kind of matches. But I have a problem with the middle stuff. Like if my wife says like, hey, we're going to a dinner party and it's like around Christmas time. It's like, oh my God, what the hell am I going to wear? I don't know what to put together. And I just need help with the middle. It's the middle that I have a terrible time with.
Well, because that's you can make huge mistakes right there in the middle.
Sure you can. Really big mistakes.
And can I tell you what I think the big mistake is for me?
What?
Sport coat.
Really?
Yeah.
I feel like now I'm feeling like maybe it's a mistake for me and I just don't know it.
With the sport coat. For me, I mean, it's like go suit or boldly go without. But the minute you kind of half it with the sport coat, I think you instantly look like somebody's dad, which of course we are.
Yeah.
Not only are we both have kids old enough to start having kids. We could actually be granddads at any moment. So who are we? Who are we to judge?
My daughter will be 30 this summer. Yeah. So maybe sport coats are the answer. But what is the answer though? What do we do? It's like you can't win. I mean, I come out of the closet and
Jimmy came out of the closet on my show.
I come out of the closet woefully heterosexual. I come out and I go, I don't know what to wear. You got to come in here and help me. And then my wife will help me and I'm not convinced she was right. And then you know what I do? And this is embarrassing. I have to say that sometimes I look at other guys at an event and I go, oh, that's how you're supposed to dress. I'm going to try to remember that for next time. But then I never do.
I think that's a perfectly fine way to do it. Here's what my wife does. And I don't understand this is I come out and go, do you like this? Do we think this works? And she'll be like, you know, great or no. But if she's in the middle with it and can't decide, she says this, who makes it?
Oh.
And I'm like, really? Like if I tell you it's JCPenney and you're going to say one thing, but if I say it's Gucci, you're going to say another, but it looks the same.
JCPenney. Yeah, I'm sure your closet is filled with La Tigre shirts.
The Tigre.
Kensington jeans.
Kensington. but that's a way you could start thinking about it. You could go by like, you know, how highfalutin the designer is.
Yeah. And then, you know, I'm fat and it's like a whole thing. And, I don't know. I think I'm just going to stay in. That's the thing. That's what I'm going to do. Stay home because this whole quarantine I used to have no problem going out to dinner 3 times a week. And now I go out once I'm wiped out. And I don't know why it is. I'm just out of, I don't know, is it like a muscle or something? An eating muscle or staying up muscle or something that you're supposed to have. But I went out to dinner last Monday night and I've been trying to recover all week from it.
I'll tell you exactly what it is. It's the stimulus. Mm-hmm. You don't realize, we don't realize as a culture how much stimulus we're getting thrown at us out at a restaurant. It's just, it's noise, it's talk, it's people, it's proximity, it's energy. And we haven't had it for a year and a half. And all of a sudden we realize, holy shit, that's a thing.
Yeah. I now understand some of these people who don't like to go anywhere. And it's always like, really, is it that terrible to go and have a conversation with people who are your friends? And I'm kind of getting it now. I don't want to get it though. I resist it. I don't want to be one of those guys, but I do understand it more.
I also think it's an age thing. I mean, I think that there are certain things that are age appropriate. And, you know, as we learn what we like and we have our lives, and we've built the lives that we want. And, you know, it's like our world gets, and I don't mean this in a bad way, our world gets smaller. Like certain things I used to want to do, I won't wait online anywhere for anything, period. I don't care. I won't do it. Not doing it. There's just certain things I'm not doing anymore. So, and the world gets a little bit smaller, but it gets better. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I don't know about the better. I think maybe better. You think it's better. I don't know if it is better because you don't have as many experiences. And I think volume of experience is probably good. I mean, I find myself listening to the same music and like I'll allow one new album into my brain per year, you know.
Totally.
Otherwise, it's like, what's on the 80s channel? Let's go to Classic Rewind or my Yacht Rock mix.
Yacht Rock is, first of all, I remember the first time I feel like I was the last guy ever to know that, to hear the term.
Yeah.
And
let me ask you this. Do you remember commercials in like the 80s or 90s? Yacht Rock, a collection, a CD collection of Yacht Rock, and they would show just kind of footage of people on the ocean yachting, and then you'd hear like the sounds of, you know, of course, Kenny Loggins and Michael McDonald and all those songs that are associated with. Do you remember that at all?
I do.
Because I can't find any trace of it online. None.
I do remember that commercial, but did they actually call it Yacht Rock?
That's what I remember. And I just remember that term being very familiar when it resurfaced and thinking, oh yeah, Yacht Rock. That's right. Oh, that's funny. Like those old CDs. And then, but now I can't find the CD. I feel like I may have imagined it.
I think it might have, maybe, because I had not heard it. I was really shocked. I thought it was the greatest idea for a musical subgenre that I'd ever heard. I think Ambrosia.
Oh, is probably, I love Ambrosia. I listen to Ambrosia at least 3 times a week.
Same.
That's how much I
feel for you, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Ambrosia, and You're the Biggest Part of Me. And I love that stuff for sure. My wife doesn't. My wife does not. She's had enough of it. Because there were only like 28 good Yacht Rock songs, you know?
It's true. My wife hates it. My wife hates... We might be married to the same woman, sounds like.
Yeah. Is your wife's name Molly?
Yeah. My wife, Cheryl, hates, she thinks that I like pop music, pop bubblegum, which I do. I'm unapologetic. Uh-huh. I do. But I also like, other stuff. But I love a good bubblegum hit. That's what I was raised on. That's what was
Me
on the
too.
Radio.
Same here. Yes. I have an ability to identify any pop song from the 80s within 1 to 2 seconds of it beginning.
Same. Okay. Well, seriously, let's make Remember This and have a competition on the show.
I would love to do that. Yeah. We'll have to get a third party.
Because I can sometimes do it from the first snare hit.
Can I tell you, this is a story I never told anybody before. A couple of times I went to Gary Shanley's house for those basketball games that he used to have when I was dating Sarah Silverman. She'd bring me. And there was an 80s like TV station on his satellite or something like that. And he had it on. And what he had me do is I sat with my back to the television. So I'm sitting like on my back is almost touching the television. And I would wait for each song to start and I would name it immediately upon beginning. And he just thought it was the greatest thing he'd ever seen. It was a weird trick. I'd do it once every 4 minutes. And he got a real kick out of it.
Let's do that. That will be, because I honestly think it could be a blood sport between the two of us.
I would love to. Yeah, we'll set it up. We'll get buzzers. We'll do the whole thing. We'll have to do it on your podcast because it's too expensive to do on television.
Right.
I've wanted to do it on television.
But you can't even do the 4-note thing because we're going to get it within 4 notes.
It's like $5,000 for every song.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to do a special podcast.
Yes. Okay.
Of you and I doing this.
All right.
But let's think about our years. I would like to go back. I would do 72.
Oh, wow. Wow. Okay. Yeah. All right. So I was only 5 and 72.
See, we're different. So it's okay. So, but you got to negotiate me. I need a little, what's the latest you would be willing to go in years?
Oh, you mean the earliest?
Earliest, I mean.
Yeah. Honestly, I would be very bad at, I mean, I know the songs from the 70s, but not in that way.
Okay. So it's just 80s then. It's just,
although I feel you're at a disadvantage, right?
No. Listen, yeah. I was stoned for half the 80s. So it's okay. My guess is I'll probably know. That's the difference. We are both in the 80s and paying attention. I was for sure getting more fucked up than you were. So yeah. I'll know the songs, but you'll actually know the titles.
Yeah. I would love to do that.
Because in the 70s, I was too young to be getting all messed up. So
right.
Those titles.
You don't know. Okay.
See what I'm saying?
Oh, you do know. Yeah, right.
I do know. I see. Because I was young.
You've got a built-in excuse is what you're saying when I destroy you. By the way, I don't want to scare you off, but I had a guess the lyrics contest with Huey Lewis about Huey Lewis songs, and I beat him 10 to nothing.
Oh, my God. It's hip it to be blank.
It wasn't quite that easy.
It was like that.
We got deep into the cuts, you know?
No way.
Yeah.
Okay, well, then this is perfect. And on the way in here, I heard on the 80s station the song, which I was reminded has to be the worst song ever recorded Ooh. By anyone ever.
Wow.
And this is a hill I'm super, okay. I'm super willing to die on this
Can we try to figure this out?
I can tell you what it is.
Oh, well, no, don't tell me right away. Don't tell me. Let me guess a little bit. It okay. Give me the year range. I know it's 80s, but like as we're talking early 80s, because there was a lot of weird stuff happening in like 1981 on the radio. The top 40 was a mix.
I would say it's late early 80s.
Okay, so we're talking about
pre 84, because 84 was the best year of all these for music.
Escape by Rupert Holmes.
Oh, that's a fucking iconic genius song.
You know
Jimmy
what? Kimmel. I didn't mean the Pina Colada song. I meant, no, him.
Oh, him is a horrible song.
Him, yeah.
Oh, it's rather. Horrible. Oh, my God. Him.
Him.
It must
him.
Be him. It's so
yeah, the
bad.
The Pina Colada song was such a good song. It kept, it gave life to him afterwards. Yeah, that was a bad one. We Built This City is a song I don't enjoy.
Can I stop you there?
Yeah.
I think if you Google this subject, We Built This City has somehow been named the worst song ever. I don't get it. I like that song.
Oh, really?
I do.
I think it was seen, first of all, as a musical betrayal by a previously great band. I think that's part of it.
Mm.
I think that it is a very, very bad song is another part of it. We built this city. And, you know, it panders to radio in a way that was off-putting.
Okay, and, well, now you're making me rethink it.
Yeah.
But that's not, for me, it's not even in the first 100 of bad songs.
Wow. Okay, tell me what it was, because we'll never
Let me, it's a major group. This is not a one-hit wonder. It's not even, it's not Rupert Holmes. It's not Al
Stewart.
Major
group.
Major.
Early 80s major group. I don't know. There's a lot of them. I don't. I think I'll take up too much time thinking.
Okay, then I'm going to give you the group. You're going to get it.
Okay.
Styx.
Oh, Mr. Roboto. A terrible song that I happen to love.
Wait a minute. Okay. Yeah. You love Mr. Roboto.
Yes.
Which I think is 100% the worst song ever made by anybody ever, period.
Yeah, I would see. I think I would feel the same way if I was like, 17 when that song came out. And but when I was, you know, really still into robots, you know, it was kind of a cool song.
You were still into robots. You
know? Yeah, Mr. Roboto is, I believe that broke up the band, that song.
Yes, and with justifiably so. One guy and I, because I heard one of them talking about this and Behind the Music, and I guess the deal was, you know, that one guy wanted to keep writing Styx songs, and the other guy fancied himself, you know, wanting to do his Quadrophenia,
right?
Or Tommy?
That's what happened?
Or
yeah,
or the Wall?
Definitely Quadrophenia. I think he was going for there, right?
Yeah. And was like, and I want it to be about the automatization of the human mind. But get this. He didn't write it. He made that guy who didn't want to write it, which is why it's so bad.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
So yeah. You want a song about a fucking robot? All right.
Adds another Jesus layer Christ. To it. I have a soft spot for that song also because many years ago when I was doing The Man Show, my cousin Sal again would just suddenly put that song on and he would jump up on the desk and do a whole robot dance routine with these other two guys. And none of them the kind of guys that you'd ever expect to see dancing in any situation. And they did the full song. They had a whole routine worked out to it, including some synchronized robotry. And it was, you know, that's, we always loved it.
That's amazing. That would make me love the song, but that's an unfair connotation that you have.
Yeah, I know. No, I know that objectively, I know that it's a very bad song, but I think there are a lot of songs like that that people go like, I know it's a bad song, but I love it.
Kilroy. Kilroy.
You know, when they wrote that and they put that down there, like, this is so fucking heavy. Kilroy was here. Like, that's, I mean, yeah. Like, it ties it all up. It all brings it together. It. Have you ever thought about, I mean, you're in the movie business. You can get things made. Would it be possible for you and I to join forces and make a feature film out of that song?
Well, I think we've come up with so many bits for your show at a minimum.
Mr. Roboto, the movie.
If we don't do Mr. Roboto, the movie together, I am the modern man.
Secret,
the
other thing secret.
Is, secret, secret. The vocal stylings are so insane.
Secret, secret. I've got a secret. Over and over again.
And I'm not sure what the secret is.
If you had a secret, why would it be going around going, secret, secret, I've got a secret? It's like, oh, all right, we're going to choke you till you tell us.
It's... And they clearly outsourced the robot. His brain is IBM.
Oh, yeah.
But his skin is made by some other company in it. But his heart is human, I think.
His heart was human.
And his blood is boiling.
Yeah, boiling blood going through a human heart can't be a good thing.
No. I'll tell you the other song I hated. You know what? The two common things with these songs is they have delusions of grandeur and aspirations of some other piece of business. Like, it's a song, but it's a song for an opera. And this was Chess. One night in Bangkok.
Yeah. Now, do you remember there were two versions of that song put out? One by Murray Head and one by Roby. And Roby was a woman who was very attractive, and it was clearly just for the music video. And Murray Head, I think, was in the play, Chad, the musical. And so he had a hit with the song on the radio, but they came out at almost the same time. And I remember seeing, because we couldn't afford MTV, we had a local video music channel on UHF, and Roby was on, and like, she was wearing like kind of a very loose shirt, and she was very sexy, and she was singing that song. And then it was also on the radio with a different guy singing it. And
I gotta look at the Roby thing. I don't remember Roby at all.
Yeah, I'd kill you at this game. This wouldn't even be. I mean, come on now. You don't know Roby.
This is not good. And we'll be right back after this.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Are you ready to unlock your inner greatness? If so, make sure to listen to my podcast, The School of Greatness, hosted by me, Lewis Howes. Join me as I sit down with world-class performers, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders to uncover their secrets to success with new episodes every single week. Whether you're striving for personal growth, business mastery, or simply seeking inspiration, The School of Greatness has something for you, and you can find it on SiriusXM, Pandora, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Subscribe and follow to the show so you never miss an episode and start your journey to greatness today.
Hey, what's the Billboard record on your wall there? Now I'm just noticing, but I can't really see it.
This is I'm in my friendly neighborhood studio in Santa Barbara.
Oh, I see. Okay. Oh,
it's my spoken word album, Jimmy.
I don't know why I thought you had a full recording studio in your house, but I guess it makes sense that you might not have.
I mean, you know, if this show does just even fractionally better, I'm going to build my own in-house recording studio.
Your wife will love that.
I kind of like just get it, even though it's like only 7 minutes away, that just particularly during COVID, of getting in my car and driving like I actually have a job to come do this.
Oh, yeah, that has got to be nice, right? Yeah, sure. That makes sense.
It makes me feel like it's more real than it actually is.
Yeah, we were doing the show from my house all summer, and it was kind of terrible. There were some nice things about it, but it was really weird to be in the house all the time. And then, like, the weekend comes, and you're still in the house. And I was getting a little crazy. I was just like, we have to go. A couple of times I just went and drove around.
Yeah. Where was the house when I came in and co-hosted your show? We did it in that house.
We rented that house. Yeah.
You rented. That was not your house.
No, that was not my house.
That house had very interesting vibes. Did you ever go to that house?
Yes. Actually, that's a house that a friend of mine owns. And it's kind of a party house.
Kind of.
Yeah, it's very much a party house. It's a party house and a place where people work out of in the daytime.
Yeah, I had like post-traumatic stress walking in. I was like, oh yeah, I think I've been here with Judd Nelson.
I think it was owned by like Gloria Swanson or something
no.
like that. Some old movie star, yeah. Somebody like that.
That was I had fun doing it. I remember it was hard doing a monologue with no guests. With yeah. no audience, not guests, no audience.
Well, if it makes you feel good, one of our head writers, Danny, said you were the best host of the summer.
Come on.
Yep, he did. He loved you.
I love hearing that. I had so much fun.
Yeah, everybody enjoyed having you.
It was fun. How long do you see yourself continuing? I know you've talked about there's been rumblings that you're done. You've done it for a long time. Or is
the thing is, each time I sign a contract, I am certain that this will be the last one. So I never really want to say, you know, but
yeah.
Each time I think it's going to be the last one. So as far as I'm thinking right now, like, yeah, this is the last one. But I also know now I know myself well enough to know like that I might change my mind.
If it ever comes down to the big, long, drawn out, milked Jimmy Kimmel goodbye coronation, can I sing Wind Beneath My Wings and cry to you at the desk?
That would be beautiful. Absolutely.
I think it would be beautiful.
Or you could pick a song and I won't know what the song is and I'll try to guess it and then you'll sing the whole
thing. I think we both know it's going to be fucking Mr. Roboto at this point. This is your final episode.
We got to do Mr. Roboto the movie. I mean, it's
we have to.
You should almost edit this out. It's such a good idea.
No, Pete. No, this is we're getting the audience ready for it.
Yeah, you're right. We're gonna lay claim to it. We're gonna get the rights. The rights before you put this on.
We don't want this stolen by Colbert.
Anyone for that matter.
All right, anybody. Listen,
forget Colbert. I'm worried. Like the major. I'm worried that Disney's gonna steal this from us.
Not when they hear the song, they'll be like, we're not doing this.
It's funny. Once J.J. Abrams was on the show and he loves Jeff Lynne and ELO.
Yeah, me too. Who doesn't?
So ELO was on the show and I said, you should come to the show tonight, and either performing in our outdoor parking lot. He's like, oh, great, great. I'm going to come to the show. So he comes to the show and we're looking at the album and I was just like, this album looks like every movie you've ever made. He's like, you're right. He's like, it's kind of weird. It's a weird, artistic influence in a different art form from a musician to some kind of imagery. I thought it was very funny and a nice little realization.
You were probably still too young, but when Star Wars came out and I was a kid and it came out for the next 7 years, every commercial had a Starfield in it. Every commercial. He's selling cars, coffee makers. Everything was in space.
Really?
Everything.
You know, my Uncle Frank, whose photograph is behind me right now, took me to see Star Wars when it came out. Well, I shouldn't say when it came out. He took me to see Star Wars like 7 months after it came out, after every kid in my school had seen it 3 times. And so he took me and my cousin Ann. And it was like middle of the day. I'm sure it was probably in the discount movie by then. We went to it. And of course, it was great. And we were like, oh, my God. And I looked over at my Uncle Frank and he was just sound asleep through the whole movie. He fell asleep almost immediately, slept through the whole movie. And then at the end, I think we're clapping. We're like only two in the theater. And Uncle Frank goes, that was boring. It was boring. You were sleeping.
How did he know?
You didn't care for it.
Question for you. Are you seriously the honorary mayor of Dildo, Newfoundland?
I am.
How did this come about?
Well, you know, my sense of humor has been described as highbrow.
Yes,
I know. Dry. You know, there are certain things that tickle me. That
your show is the Algonquin Round Table.
That has been said.
Yes.
And it came to my attention that there was a town named Dildo in Canada. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed this. And I decided to run for mayor. I found out they didn't have a mayor. And I decided to become mayor of the town. And for about 2 weeks, it's all I talked about. And then I had a big plan to go there. And I was going to go there last summer. They have these dildo days. It's like a festival there.
Oh, man.
And then COVID hit and I was unable to go there. And it screwed the whole thing up. But I am going to go there sometime. And they told me I can have, they've given me a plot of land. It's a very small plot of land. But it's like enough for like me to park my RV on because I think I should have property there. And I'm hoping, I don't know if this would get me like dual citizenship or what, mm-hmm. but I do want to spend some time. I think of them as my people.
Well, no, and nobody can accuse you of being a carpetbagger because you actually have land there.
That's right. And I bought them a sign, much like the Hollywood sign that says Dildo that they put up in the hills. So it's something for people to go see and take pictures with. And actually, weirdly, like their tourism increased by some like huge multiple. People started going there just because it's a beautiful town, but it's named Dildo, you know.
I think that's the greatest thing. That's one of your greatest accomplishments. Forget hosting the Oscars and your long running show and all that. Tell me about the Oscars. What's your takeaway from the Oscars?
After hosting the show?
Yeah.
It's like being at a wedding you weren't invited to.
Mm.
It's like you're part of it, but you're not really part of it. You're the hired help. It's kind of like being the DJ at a, you know, at a graduation or something, you know. And except for I think I made more as a DJ at parties when I was in college than I did at the Oscars.
That's the thing that people don't realize is they don't realize it's not a particularly paying gig.
It's funny because it used to be a thing where like, yeah, it's great. You know, a lot of people see you and it's a great opportunity and this and that. But the truth is now it's just like it's an opportunity to have your life torn to shreds, to have people like rummaging through the garbage of your existence and pulling things out and attacking you. And then afterwards, like if you do a great job, you get like, okay. And that's about it. But if there's even a moment, I mean, by moment, you get people like looking at your, and I'm not talking about just myself, I'm talking about any Oscar host, you know, you like they'll be doing a monologue and people are commenting on each one of their jokes as you go. And like, is this the way to watch something? Is this the way to appreciate comedy? You're writing about what you're hearing as you're hearing it. I mean, like, you wouldn't write a movie review like that, would you, with your laptop out?
Yeah, you go on these websites, and it's like 12:03 p.m. Kimmel tells a joke about Harvey Weinstein. It bombs.
Yeah, right.
When it's like, that's the thing. 12:03 p.m. Now, what it's like, it's insane.
It's not even it bombs. It's not even as objective as that. They don't even, the response of the audience is not sufficient. It's how it hit them. Not, you know, they can hear everyone laughing and decide that it was not a good joke.
Also, the more at the beginning of the night, everybody's a winner, a potential winner in the audience. So, but you start getting, categories start going by and now people have lost and realize their movie doesn't have any traction and whatever. And then it's got to be even harder to make people laugh.
Tense and disgruntled. But I will say, just honestly, I mean, without joking, it's like that those doing those Oscar shows and the Emmy show that preceded it. I did the Emmys and then the Oscars like 3 months later are some of the things I'm most proud of doing because we really, and I say I am speaking on like about our writers and our producers. Like we put so much work into it, but you know, when you do a show every night, you're doing a show every night. You can't, every show can't be 100%. It just can't. It just doesn't work that way. If you can get it to 85, you're doing really well. So, but for us, we wanted that one to be 100. And, unfortunately at the end of the first one I hosted, they had the wrong, envelope. So, it created the impression that something that you know, the Oscars was some kind of a disaster, when the truth is it was going great until the very, very end of the show.
And by the way, and it's not on, we can argue about whether it was a disaster or not, but it isn't your fault.
And a lot of people didn't understand that, or they willfully didn't understand it. And I do find myself every once in a while in an interview having to explain to the person, like, well, you realize I had just as much to do with that as you did, right? Well, like, I was in the audience when that happened. I wasn't even backstage. There's literally no way I could have been involved in that.
Every year when the Oscars come out, they do top 10 embarrassing Oscar moments, and I'm always number one still. Always. Right.
We gotta get somebody to do something to topple that. Oh, maybe I have a great idea. Whoever, when we get nominated for best song for Mr. Roboto,
yeah,
whoever sings that will probably beat you.
Well, if they just sang the song straight, they should. but what I want to tell these people is, like, look, when I did my song and dance number with Snow White, I want to say, first of all, Marvin Hamlisch wrote it.
Right.
I'm 22 years old.
Oh, wow.
Whatever I am. What am I? The Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences.
Isn't that funny?
What am I supposed to say? You guys are idiots?
Well, it turns out, that's what you're supposed to say. I mean, that's funny. When in your career did you realize, oh, maybe these people that I assumed really know what they're doing don't actually know what they're doing? Was there a moment?
That was one of the big ones.
Really? Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess that would be
that was
big, yeah.
Was one of the big ones. And I say to this day, I say, wait, how is it that I'm, if not at the top of the list, near the top of the list, when the Oscars can't even figure out how to get the right envelope into the right people's hands for best picture, and I'm the problem? The hell? I would have thought that would have been the end of it. No. Maybe because it was Warren and he's so beloved.
He didn't do anything either. And he was smart, man. He was really smart because he wouldn't let go of that envelope. When we were backstage, people were like, oh, yeah, let me have that envelope. Let me see. And he's like, no, no. If you want to look at the envelope, I'm holding it right now. Go ahead and look at it. And I saw it and it said La La Land. It said Emma Stone on it. You know, he read what was on that envelope he was given. It was confusing because it also said Emma Stone and it was Best Picture. But I know one thing.
So what
I know
exactly
is,
what exactly did happen?
What happened was this. It's a little bit complicated, but Emma Stone won Best Actress.
It would have to be complicated to have happened. If it were simple, it wouldn't have.
There are matching envelopes on each side of the stage. That way, the producers don't have to figure out in advance of the show where the entrances are going. If they cut for time or whatever, they want to have the option of bringing the stars out from either side of the stage. So there are two matching envelopes that say Best Actor, that say Best Actress, that say Best Picture, etc. All the categories. Well, what happened was they didn't skip to the next envelope on the left side of the stage. So when it came time for Best Picture, they handed Warren Beatty the envelope that said Best Actress. That was for Best Actress. It doesn't say it on the envelope. It just says Oscars on the envelope. And he went out and that's the one that he read.
Wow.
And Faye Dunaway was the smartest of all, because when it happened, she got the hell out of there. She made a beeline for the back and she was gone. Warren was being interrogated. Meanwhile, they presented together. Warren was being interrogated for like an hour after this show. And Faye Dunaway was already at the In-N-Out Burger on the corner by her house. You know, she was gone.
See, this is why I didn't take Charlie Sheen up on his offer one year when I was giving the Emmy to Best Comedy Actor and Charlie was nominated.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't talked to Charlie in years and years and years, even though we grew up together. And I'm driving to the ceremony. I'm in the tuxedo. Phone rings. It's Charlie. He's like, hey, so why? You're doing my category. I go, yeah. He goes, you know, the odds in Vegas of me winning are 20-1. I go, yeah, no, it's going to be Alec Baldwin again, for sure. And he's like, so here's the thing. I'm going to put a bet down that I win. You read my name. I'll give you half the money. And I was like, what? He's like, you and I will make $10 million in one night. And I go, and I laughed it off, and he called me. He was dead serious, by the way. And I was like, Charlie, if I read your name, but it says Alec Baldwin, what are we going to do about the envelope? What are we going to do about the card? And he was like, I'll make a ruckus. And everybody was, and then you eat it.
I ate it. I actually did that. I had that very thought. I went out on stage at the Emmys one year and I said, you know, I can read any name I want right now. I don't have to read the name that's on this card. In fact, I could eat the card if I want. And I did. I ate the card. And everyone laughed. And then I announced the winner. But you really could do that. The problem is that when they figured it out, I mean, if he's betting that kind of money, which I don't think you even can bet on an award show, I think they have limits on that because there are people who know. But if you're betting that kind of money, I mean, somebody's going to at least break your legs afterwards, if not kill you.
I don't think he'd thought it that far through.
Yeah, maybe not. Well, that seems to be a recurring theme in his life.
I mean, I thought it was. And then it was, well, can you hold it up to the light and see the name? And then I could get a bet. It was all that kind of crazy.
No, you can't do that either.
But see, it's so funny that it just is something as simple as there's a stage manager forgot to move the envelope. That's what it is.
Yeah. No, in this case, it was the accountant. It wasn't the stage manager. It was the accounting firms keep tight grip on that sort of thing. And it was a guy who weirdly looked a lot like Matt Damon and who knew he was responsible. But he wasn't so quick to say it backstage. He let Warren kind of simmer for a while. He let people, because at the beginning, people were like, Warren is getting up there. Warren made a mistake. That's probably what happened. That was the theory going on. I was just kind of like, well, that's a weird mistake to make. I mean, that's an awfully specific mistake to make.
There's a great photo. Busy Phillips is a friend of mine, and she was there with Michelle Williams, who was nominated there in the front row. And there's a great photo. Have you seen it of people's reactions?
I think maybe I saw it a couple of years
ago. Oh, it's so good. And people are like covering their face, their mouths. By the way, that's what Barry Levinson looked like in the audience when I was singing to Snow White. He looked exactly the same.
I was in the audience too when it happened, and I didn't know what was going on. And I have one more bit to do with Matt Damon, and he goes, "Something's going on." And I was like, "Well, what's going to see something? Why is the stage manager on right in the middle of the stage?" And he goes, "I think they read the wrong winner." And I go, "Huh?" And he goes, "I think you better go up there." Really? He's like, "Yeah." I was like, "Yeah, I guess I do have to go up there. I'm the only one who's mic'd." I mean, I didn't know what was happening, but I had to go up there and mediate, I guess, or tap dance until they straightened it out.
That's Oscar history.
Yeah.
I mean, like, enough with the streaker behind David Niven. Enough. Enough, which I'm convinced was staged.
You think so?
Oh, 100%. You know why?
Why?
Because it's just too facile and quick, the cropping.
Oh, I see. Okay.
The camera angle is like preset to not show anything offensive.
Ah, interesting.
There's no fumbling for Jim. I call bullshit on that.
You mean it was just shot too well?
Shot too well.
Yeah.
I mean, the minute he was there, he was on camera. The minute. Not like, what's going on? Camera three, camera two. What? Oh, there it is. None of that. It was like, boom. And perfectly cropped, not to offend anybody. I'm like, it's bully. Even as a 6-year-old in Ohio, I was like, it's Hollywood bullshit.
You're a very cynical 6-year-old.
Well, this has been so fun. What writer are we going to put on this Roboto thing? Or we still want to even give that away, I don't think.
I think we got to bang this out ourselves. I don't know if we can trust this to anybody.
I agree.
Think this has to be a real cone of silence.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
Should I try to crack an outline and get it over to you later?
Every time. Oh, when we go in to pitch it, we'll go, secret, secret, we have a secret.
You
we'll
cannot like find out until we tell you.
I'm so glad. I really think this is going to bring the movies back. This is going to be the thing to do it.
It is.
No streaming, theaters only.
No, if ever there was anything meant to be experienced communally, it's the Mr. Roboto movie.
Yeah. Kilroy. I hope there's somebody out there who's never heard the song or heard of the song who now is going to listen to it and experience it for the first time and think of us.
And can I tell you, no matter it, again, like I said, this hill I will die on all day long. As bad as I'm saying it is, it's worse when you listen to it. You can't believe it's a real song.
Yeah.
I mean, it's no hymn.
I think we have the slug line for our poster. You can't believe it's a real song.
Or ellipses or movie, exclamation mark. Wait, here's the real question. What are we going to do about billing? Or are we going to go what they call towering inferno billing?
Well, I don't think anybody's going to be interested in me being in it. I think I'm going to have to be like a behind the scenes guy.
Oh,
I mean, I would love to be in it if the director
you can't do
feels
like,
that it's.
I mean, I think.
Well, I would listen. Believe me, I'll be happy to be in it. But I have a feeling you get the starring role, and I'm like the technician. Like we need more circuit boards. Johnny, go get them, and then you just see me run off, and maybe see a little bit of my ass.
Circuits. We need the circuits.
The worst song in history is now a major motion picture.
Oh, that! Come on. I'm not kidding. I would watch that if that were
me too.
Wouldn't you watch that? I'd watch the hell out of that.
Absolutely.
All right. I'm calling my people.
Okay. Yeah. Call your people.
I'm calling my people, and hopefully I'll see you soon with an audience.
Yes. Yes. I'm looking forward to seeing what you're dressed in and all of that stuff.
Yes. 100%. Thank you. This was so much fun.
Thanks, Rob. That was fun. I enjoyed it.
Secret.
We've got a secret.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Take care.
This show is over. It's over. You could almost do it with anything, right? I think I'm leaving. I'm leaving. You could do it with anything, really. I think that's stuck in my head. How many of you are right now going to try to listen to that awful song? A lot of you are. And I wonder if I hear from Styx. How cool would that be? I think it'd be cool, actually. Guys, that was so fun. This is the part of doing the podcast that I like, where I just get somebody on and we just bro out and have fun and talk crap. And I could have done that for another hour. All right. It is time for the lowdown line.
Hello. You've reached literally in our lowdown line, where you can get the lowdown on all things about me, Rob Lowe. 323-570-4551. So have at it. Here's the beep.
Okay, our names are Anna, Kaya, and Mahi. We're from Atlanta, and we want to know if you could go back to the past. In hindsight, what role would you stop yourself from playing?
Aw. You guys are interesting. Come up with that for me. From Atlanta, my favorite city. I'm going to say, what role would I stop myself from playing? This is a good one. I've been stumped by a trifecta of gals from Atlanta. Stymied. Struck wordless. I never really wanted to play Youngblood. I did. People like it. I don't think it's that. I'm just going to go with this. I would stop myself from hosting the MTV New Year's 1985, 86. One of them I hosted, and I was still drinking heavily. And I told them that by the time I was on the Western time zone, I'd be drunk. It's New Year's Eve. They're not paying me enough not to party. And of course, by the time it got to, and I just found a picture online of Martha Quinn and I. These, by the way, from the sound of your voice, you're not going to know who any of these people are. You guys sound youngish. But they're the original VJs. Do you know what a VJ is? They don't even know what that is. Do you know what MTV is? Okay, they used to. You ready for this? Hang on. MTV, used to play music. Yes. Once upon a time. And that New Year's Eve was the biggest. It was even bigger than Anderson Cooper's New Year's Eve. It was that big. That's how big it was. It was before anybody cared about anything. And I think people liked that I was kind of like, just welcome to 1983, 2, 1. And they were counting down. I was still doing some dumb speech they wrote for me. So I'm going to go with that. I would have jumped in front of myself and said, why don't you let somebody else do MTV New Year's 1986? Anyway, I hope you enjoyed it. And come back next week because we got more fun up our sleeves here on Literally.
You have been listening to Literally with Rob Lowe. Produced and engineered by me, Devin Torrey Bryant. Executive produced by Rob Lowe for Low Profile. Adam Sachs and Jeff Ross at Team Coco. And Colin Anderson and Chris Bannon at Stitcher. The supervising producer is Aaron Blair. Talent producer, Jennifer Samples. Please rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts. And remember to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Stitcher.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.